Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori. We've always thought that the most compelling story strikes the perfect balance between an honest look at the mess of life and the humor that can be found in the mess. To be perfectly honest, we don't really know how to live life without both the humor and the authenticity.
Our podcast might be a little bit of whiplash at times. We can spin from hard and deep to humor and laughing on a dime. The hard will be really hard, and the truths we share are the ugliest of humanity. We don't intend to make it seem like it's all fine or to pretty up the pain, but we also know that the joy we found is all the more profound because of the pain.
So we hope you can stick with us through the ugly, because there will also be joy and hope and humor. Welcome to The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door.
Hey, Kate here. So I wanted to give you yet another little intro into the episode you're about to listen to. In this episode, Lori and I talk about how the church or organizations could respond better to sexual abuse or any abuse allegations. But before you listen, we wanted to address a concern that we have heard as people have responded to what we have been sharing. The issue of why we have not been willing to meet with the chapel leadership again at this time. We've already told you and stated many times over, Lori and I originally brought these issues to the chapel back in both 2020 and 2021. And between now and then, so many meetings and conversations with the chapel leadership have been had. Lori has met with them. My father-in-law, John Gannon, has met with them. Other chapel staff members who believe and support me in this have met with them. Many, many, many meetings, many, many, many emails, phone calls, and conversations have already been had regarding how they should respond and what this should look like. The information that we lay out in the second half of this episode, Lori and I have also shared that document with the chapel leadership and the board about 2 weeks ago. Since receiving that information, they have asked us to meet with them yet again. However, their posture on the matter remains unchanged. So meeting after meeting without action seems fruitless. At this point, the issue is really not between Lori and myself and the chapel. The issue is much larger, and really it's between the chapel and their congregates. We feel like it's really between the chapel and the Greater Church of Western New York. We're just here to share the information, to open people's eyes to the truth, and sometimes to provide an opportunity for others to share their stories as well, like you heard last week with Amber Lee. We're here to raise awareness and hopefully to find safety in people knowing and being aware. So, all of that being said, take a listen to this episode. And as always, we just thank you so, so much for listening and for supporting. It's been so amazing to get so many awesome responses. Hi, welcome back to our podcast, The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door.
This is like take four or something. Like, wow.
Okay, in fairness, though, this is the third recording that we're doing today, which we don't typically do, but today we try to fit it all in. So,
yeah. So,
our brains are a little bit fried.
Yeah, glitching out a little bit over here.
Just a little. What's our episode about today, Lori?
So today our episode is to talk about what should it look like? What should a good, healthy, appropriate, skillful response be from an organization like a church, specifically like the chapel, when an allegation is presented to the leadership? Mm-hmm. That is the topic today. I just feel the need to comment that I compiled a list of probably about 30, some of them were videos, some of them were like PDFs, 30 resources basically that directly addressed what to do and what not to do in a church context when there is an abuse allegation that has come forward in about 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. So if you've been following along with our podcast, you know that we have been frustrated and saddened by the lack of response, lack of appropriate response by the chapel. And so the fact that it did not take a whole lot of digging for me to find those resources, it just reinforces once again that there is not a valid excuse for not knowing how to do it right. And by the way, there are people you can pay minimal amounts of money as an organization, and they will advise you on such things.
Yeah, and be an outside resource. In one of our recent episodes, Tim Kennedy, who we talked to, says, you know, you can't have the person who's running the investigation have a vested interest in finding nothing, which is kind of the MO of the chapel that we have found, is that the people running the internal, you know, their own investigation have a vested interest in protecting the chapel. So the outside,
and themselves, by the way, if you were the person who was responsible for holding policies steady,
right,
and making sure they were enforced, and something happened on your watch, you're going to have a vested interest in finding nothing. Covering your own butt.
Right. But so, yeah, so these outside resources that we're talking about, wildly important, just, yeah, to have a neutral party, be able to be advising on that is invaluable. So invaluable, is that a word?
Invaluable, yes. Wordle. I thought you were wordling.
Listen, I can't. It's too much. It takes up way too much brain space. Do you know my one of my coworkers, she does not Wordle. Like, she has said, I won't Wordle. I don't want to do it. But every day at lunch, when these other ladies ask, did you get the Wordle? She's always like, oh, no, not today. She's wild. Anyways. Okay. Yeah. So, okay. So how should we're going to say a church. We really mean just any organization. It's just that we have found that, you know, this happens in churches, and a lot of times it's met with not a good response.
Correct. Right. I feel like so other organizations, public organizations like schools and businesses, they have all kinds of like laws and policies in place that people have to follow, right? Mm-hmm. If somebody comes to HR and alleges sexual harassment, there are all kinds of policies and procedures that are meant to be followed. Mm-hmm. But churches somehow sort of often, again, we're making a generalized statement, and please know that we have been so encouraged to encounter leaders from some churches locally, who have done it so well and who have stepped up in a situation that frankly does not directly involve their congregation, but it involves the body of Christ and it involves the Church of Western New York. And they have been very willing to step into this space to try to advocate for an improvement, a change in how these things are done. So when we say the church, blah, 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 we're not saying all the churches and all the leaders. We are saying specifically those leaders of churches who perhaps do not get this right.
Right. So. Well, and I think from my perspective, the leaders of these specific churches are in the minority.
Yes, it seems that way.
Yeah.
Right. But. That either there is a fear of being not a team player, or we know in the case of the chapel that the chapel does a lot of church planting, and so there are financial entanglements that I think could make that complicated. Mm-hmm. Or there's just, honestly, pastors of small churches are often so overwhelmed by just what they're doing right in front of them that mm-hmm. they don't have the space or energy to think about stepping outside that. And that's understandable, but we are grateful for those who are able and willing to kind of just wade into this mess.
Yeah, absolutely. So grateful.
Okay. So all of that being said, there are plenty of resources out there for an organization to look to have information about what it should look like. And in about 20 minutes, I was able to compile a whole big resource list. And so what I will say that churches need to improve their policies based on best practices, which again, are readily available out there. And we're going to talk about a chunk of it. And if maybe they think their policies are already in place and that their policies are tight, then they need to adhere to those policies with consistency and confidence, right? There shouldn't be any like wandering around, not sure what to do. The policies are in place for a reason, and they're meant to minimize any emotional responses, right?
Yeah.
We don't want to be reacting based on how we feel, because maybe the person who is alleged as an abuser is someone that you know and you trust and respect, and now you're going to have all kinds of feelings about it. And or maybe, frankly, the victim is someone that you have experienced as being messy, and maybe you're going to have all kinds of feelings about that. But guess what? Feelings should not be the determining factor in how a policy is represented. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the whole point of having policies and procedures in place. You know, it's not different than what's, you know, at my job, what's the policy, what's the procedure when there's a fire, right? There's a certain step, like there's a certain written out step-by-step instructions as to what we're supposed to do so that we don't react with emotion and fear and, oh my goodness, there's a fire in the building. You execute the policies and procedures. That's just the way that life is.
That is the way that life is. Absolutely. Right. It should be pretty straightforward. Those policies also need to be transparent. Mm-hmm. And the organizations need to be transparent both in what their policies are and what the follow through is if those policies are not adhered to.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
They should be readily available for anyone who asks to see them.
Yeah, not like, I don't know, we'll get back to you in 5 years. Like,
or never.
Yeah. They should be, right. Easily accessible.
Correct. So any response to an allegation of sexual abuse should be victim-centric in word and deed. Very important, because we've experienced several experiences where the words are being said, mm-hmm. but the actions do not support the words being said.
Oh yes, many times we've experienced this.
Yes, you certainly more over the course of your lifetime.
Just in this, you know, this over the last year with the chapel, we've experienced so many meetings that we've walked out of and been like, okay, they get it. I can probably go back and find the text where you're like, I really think he gets it this time. And then guess what? They don't. So because
right. The words are there, but the actions are not.
Yeah.
So the word and deed should communicate. We believe you. What happened to you is not your fault. We stand with you and we will help you mm-hmm. in word and deed. One of the ways that that an organization can communicate that through deed is that the alleged offender should be removed from his or her role immediately.
Yep.
You can always walk that back. This protects potential victims. It also sends a very clear message to both survivors and offenders, right? Mm-hmm. We need that anybody who has nefarious ideas to understand that they will not be permitted to stay in their role.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we've talked about that so many times that, you know, the person should be removed from their role immediately. And we've talked about it mostly in terms of volunteers, but I also would just like to go on record saying that, like, any, especially volunteer, but even staff member who may be, you know, being alleged that these things happen, may allegedly be a perpetrator. If they are not a perpetrator, the gut reaction would be like, oh my goodness, yeah, no, I would like to get out of there myself because I don't want to be caught up in that. I don't want to be looked at as, you know, uncooperative or whatever, you know, because I didn't do that.
So not only would you want to be removed so that you are not caught up in things, but people who have a heart for the vulnerable mm-hmm. would be willing to do anything that they could to help protect.
Yeah, exactly. If you're not guilty, then what's the problem?
Right. There isn't a problem, except
right.
sometimes organizations act like there is a problem. So right. part of what you heard when you listened to the episode with Amber Lee and Tim is that some of the statements made were that they didn't want to dishonor any of the volunteers by removing them when they were not guilty of any offense. I don't know what to say to that other than clearly the need to protect the victim and other potential victims should always come out ahead of anybody having their feelings hurt. And somebody who really, again, cares about the vulnerable is going to be disappointed, maybe, might be sad, but they're not going to be having their feelings hurt. So there should also be a pre-existing plan in place, right? So this is, again, policies and procedures. This is not, oh my goodness, now there's an allegation. We've never had this experience before. So now we just have to invent this on the fly because we are blindsided by this. No, absolutely not. There's no reason for that to be so. There isn't. And any pre-existing plan must include removing the alleged offender immediately, a report to the authorities, providing trauma-informed support to the victim, and facilitating connections to professional credentialed counseling. Mm-hmm. right? So support to the victim can be lay people. That makes sense. Trauma-informed lay people. This does not, however, take the place of skilled, professional, credentialed counseling.
Right.
Okay. Another important piece of a church's response should certainly be an investigation in which that church does not have control of the investigator, control of the process, control of the findings, or control of the final report. That prevents any sort of shading of the information that is discovered to protect the organization.
Yeah, which is what we keep saying. You can't have the person running the investigation who has a vested interest in covering for themselves or covering for the institution. It doesn't work. It's like having, I mean, literally that's the definition of dirty cops.
Right.
Right.
Yes, absolutely.
You know.
So one of the things that we have learned since starting the podcast is that when situations began to be unfolding with the Circle C women, that the chapel originally reached out to Grace Ministries. I don't know if it's called that. Grace, GRAC, it stands for Godly Response to Abuse in a Christian Environment. That is like the equivalent of Ministry Safe. So we were told that the chapel originally reached out to Grace, but decided not to go with Grace because Grace told them that they would be making their findings public at the end of the their investigation. And the chapel did not want their findings to be made public, which is consistent with what we heard from Amberlee and Tim about this emphasis on let's not like let the information spin out. As an aside, I don't think that we mentioned in the episode with Amberlee and Tim that we also heard from a staff person who was a staff person on site at the Lockport campus at the time when Amberlee's daughter was abused. And he was in a leadership role with children at that campus. And he did not know that there were these allegations in place until the Buffalo News report came out.
Yeah, which is just wildly inappropriate. I mean, what?
Right. He couldn't be on guard. He couldn't be
protecting the people that he was working with.
And there's no excuse.
No,
none.
It's just insanity.
Yes, it is insanity. And by the way, that person is also one of the pastors who has been actively supportive of us.
Yeah.
And he did. I don't think I told you this, but he did say that he's okay with us sort of naming him. So that is Scott Lackey from New Story Church in Buffalo.
Yeah. Love him. Love him and his wife.
Yep. So lovely grateful people. For what their role in what we're doing here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So what not to say or do? Again, it's a little repetitious, but do not delay removing the alleged offender. Do not do your own investigation without authorities being involved. Do not do your own investigation with untrained people. Untrained as in people who lack specific training around sexual abuse allegations and how to examine them.
Yeah. And trained people does not equal people who have gone through your organization's classes to become trained people. That is still people part of your organization and have been trained by you. So that doesn't count.
That's a circle.
Right.
We don't want a circle here.
Literally going in circles.
No, let's not do that.
So
do not allow personalities to interfere with your approach to responding, no matter who it is.
Yep. Which is, so much of the problem here.
Do not default to waiting for a conclusion by law enforcement before taking action.
Mm-hmm. We have said this time and time and time again, to no fault of any specific law enforcement, but law enforcement is not the say all and the end all, and they are not usually the answer.
I don't think we can emphasize this enough. The standard for the evidence that is required for a criminal prosecution is so high. It is the foundation of our jurisprudence system, right? It is so high beyond a reasonable doubt. That is the standard. That is a very high standard and very difficult to meet in these kinds of situations, especially. However, that doesn't mean that something didn't happen. It simply means that in an effort to protect people from prosecution for crimes that they didn't commit, our legal system has very high protections against that. Mm-hmm. And so it's important that we understand. So not only is it very hard to get a prosecution, but those in law enforcement, they know that it's hard to get a prosecution, a conviction. So they won't even go forward with a case unless they think they have a good shot at winning.
Yep.
And by the way, that's 2 to 5% is the statistic that was shared by Ministry Safe. 2 to 5% of sexual abuse events are actually brought to law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
That's
tiny. I mean, and we've seen this so many times, right? I mean, Amber Lee said it with her daughter, that the detective was like, it's not that I don't believe you. I 100% believe you. And if it was up to me, we would be taking this all the way. But I have to convince my bosses, who have to convince their bosses, who have to present the evidence, and maybe we win the case. Same thing was told to us. It's not that I don't believe you. I 100% believe you. I know it's true. I've seen the facts. I've seen the evidence. But that takes time. There has to be, you know, there's so many different things that have to come into place before that can happen. So law enforcement, while they do the best at their job and no one is saying anything different than that, it's not the say-all and the end-all in these cases. It's just not.
So to highlight, again, I don't know that we commented on this either. And when we were doing the event with Amber Lee and Tim, so to quote John Camardo from the Buffalo News article, hang on, let me find it. He specifically was quoted as saying, law enforcement never asked us to remove any volunteers. If they had asked us, we would have done that immediately. That was the statement, mm-hmm. which it's important to recognize. That's not really the point. The point is that we're not waiting for law enforcement to remove volunteers or whoever is perhaps
law enforcement
alleged.
Doesn't have a vested interest in your organization. Their job is to come out, take the report, do the investigation. Maybe they can prosecute, maybe they can't. That's the end. They don't really care what happens with your volunteers and you know what I mean? Like, that's right. Not their job is to tell you how to do your job. You need to figure out how to do your job yourself.
And as a pastor, as a leader in a church, that should be obvious. Mm-hmm. It should be very clear that your first priority needs to be the safety of certainly the children in your building,
yeah.
but certainly of anyone who's in the flock. Where's the shepherd?
Right.
Where's the shepherd?
Right.
Okay. So those are kind of the more general comments about how an organization should respond. There are plenty more. I mean, feel free to post your thoughts, right? We're mm-hmm. happy to, and we will compile a list of all of the continuing thoughts of what it should look like in a church. But we have also asked the chapel for some very specific things to move this process forward. Shall we?
Yeah.
All right. So we have asked for a full public acknowledgement that there was ample information available to remove Kate's complicit abuser in early 2020 from the counseling role and at a minimum not be working with abuse survivors. We have asked for an acknowledgement that the failure to remove the complicit abuser cannot be attributed to a lack of information available to leadership, since I, Lori, personally communicated directly with the executive pastor that I was concerned about this person's role in the counseling ministry in February of 2020. We're also looking for a public acknowledgement that the failure to remove her cannot be attributed to one person, the counseling pastor, alone, because that is just not how leadership works.
No.
If it is all blamed on him, then he should be removed from his role because he failed to do the right thing and also failed to bring it up the chain of command.
Mm-hmm.
We are also looking for a public acknowledgement that the executive pastor, who is very close to Kate, who is close to the situation and close to Kate's abusers, should not have been involved in the discussions about what to do in any way.
They would like to say that that was how that went down. We have knowledge that that's not how that went down.
Right. So. We are also looking for a public acknowledgement that the disclosure of sex trafficking and direct abuse allegations by Kate's father in April of 2021 should have resulted in removing Kate's complicit abuser immediately. There shouldn't have been a conversation. There shouldn't have been a delay. There shouldn't have been, I heard something like they were out of town when we first brought it to them. Irrelevant, frankly. It should have happened immediately. I don't know. Don't quote me on that. But I thought I heard like well, you know, they were, and that might be true. I vaguely remember maybe that, but again, irrelevant, frankly, they should have been removed immediately. By the way, we have these things called cell phones these days. And
you can honestly, it's a text. Hey, don't show up for volunteering next week. Call me when you can.
Yeah.
I could send that text. I probably have sent that text, honestly, in my previous life, job.
You probably have. Mm-hmm. So we are asking for a public acknowledgement that there is a pattern of responding without clarity to abuse concerns, including Circle C, the Lockport toddler, and Kate.
Yep.
We're looking for an acknowledgement that Kate and others have been harmed as a result of the failure to respond appropriately to these allegations. If you listened to Amberlee talk about kind of the impact and the stress that she was already dealing with, a toddler who was devastated and anxious and having all kinds of emotional and behavioral issues as a result of the abuse that happened. And then on top of it, she is being overwhelmed and stressed out, trying to navigate through waters that she should not have had to fight through. It should have been an appropriate and healthy response out the gate. Instead, it made it harder, not easier. That results in harm. We are looking for an acknowledgement that the chapel leadership had ample opportunities to have direction regarding how to proceed in such situations, including things like Ministry Safe or Grace. Their website, right on their website, directly addresses how to respond to an allegation. So there's no excuse for saying we weren't sure what to do or say.
Right. Yeah. You can't keep using the same excuse. We didn't know. We didn't have enough information. We never had to deal with this before. We don't know. We don't know. You do know.
Right. So we're also looking for Kate's abusers to be asked to step back from any activities at the chapel. Now, some of you may be listening and saying, wait, hold up. You mean to tell me that they're still there?
Yes. Yes, they are.
So we were contacted by someone who's been sitting in a spiritual formation class at the chapel, and they realized that Kate's abusers are sitting in this class with them. There's no reason why they should be in the building.
No.
And I'm not sure how to understand that we're allowing someone accused of sex trafficking their child to attend anything in the building. Beyond that, so when that question has been asked, the response was, oh, well, actually, that's not a chapel-sponsored thing. It's happening at the chapel, being taught by someone who was a long-time staff person.
Decades on staff.
Like, was part of the chapel at the very beginning of the chapel, basically. Very involved person. And he's the one teaching it. And that doesn't make sense.
And it's on their website, mm-hmm, as part of a next step. I mean, offer. So that's such an irrelevant argument.
Right.
It doesn't even really warrant a response, but here it is.
I mean, it's laughable.
It's laughable. Really laughable. Like, what does that even mean?
It means nothing. It means nothing.
It means we don't not believe her.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yes. Which means what?
Right.
Okay. So we are also saying that the counseling ministry at the chapel needs strong, clinically skilled, experienced, trauma-informed leadership if its services are going to be provided beyond the worried well. Mm-hmm. If you've listened before, I think of the worried well as people who are experiencing speed bumps in their life, who are looking for some, I don't know, a more mature, more experienced person to come along beside them who maybe has some special training, but it's speed bumps. It's not cliffs. If the chapel counseling ministry is going to say that they're moving beyond that, including working with children or working with trauma survivors, they must have a clinically experienced, skilled leadership.
Which the current counseling pastor has already admitted privately to us via a badly written apology, that he is not that, that he
doesn't claim to understand
the scope of what I have experienced. So that's problematic, honestly. You can't have someone in charge of the counseling ministry and call it the counseling ministry who doesn't know that.
So if the chapel is going to talk about bringing someone into the counseling ministry to meet that need of a strong, clinically skilled, experienced person, it needs to be all of those three things and someone who is strong enough and assertive enough and who has enough credibility mm-hmm. to be able to lead, even though the current counseling pastor has been there forever and ever. And
well, it's kind of the circle theory again, right? Mm-hmm. You can't have someone who's been trained by the current counseling pastor to do counseling now be in charge of the counseling ministry, which he still is a part of. And P.S., this potential person has also worked with my abuser. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, there's a circle right. theory again. We're just literally recycling people and circling back in right. the same way.
Right. So no, we're not casting aspersion on anyone here. It's not that like we don't have an issue with any of these people that we're talking about necessarily, but does the person that they're going to tap for that meet that criteria?
Right.
we are asking also for an acknowledgement that the statement of the counseling pastor from the platform in January of 2022 was not just a lack of judgment or that he misspoke. It really reflects a complete failure to understand the enormity of what is alleged here. Like, it's unfathomable why someone would even think, never mind say, that he appreciates so much having walked in community with Kate's abusers. So there needs to be an acknowledgement that it's more than just the words that were said.
Yeah. It's not just like Yeah.
Right.
There's not even words to say about that.
No, there really isn't. Yeah. Absolutely not. Okay.
I think that's it.
We'll have to turn this part as
well. Well, yeah. How does your church do it better? Right. I mean, we posted on Instagram, ask your church leaders, what are you doing? How are you making sure that our staff and our volunteers are trauma informed? And what are our policies and procedures? Ask your church leaders that. Because if they're doing it right, they won't have a problem telling you that. They'll be transparent about it, right?
And if they're not doing it right, you'll know their heart by how they respond.
Yeah.
Because if they say, oh, wow, you're completely right. We have work to do in this. Yeah. Let's talk about how to do that.
Right. I recognize more than anybody that people like my abusers are very, very good at what they do. They are very good at manipulating people. They are very good at covering their own things and their own, you know.
Can I comment on this? Actually, I've been listening to a lot of the stuff that's been out there. And the Kimberly Norris from Ministry Safe, she was on Neil Baran recently. And one of the things that she said repeatedly that I had not really heard it said this way before is that abusers don't only groom their victims, they groom the gatekeepers.
Mm-hmm.
They position themselves as being, as you've said before, helpful and responsible and approachable, and to groom the gatekeepers in order to gain access to the vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And are we aware of that? Are we paying attention to that?
Yeah. Yeah. They're good at what they do, but that means that you need to be better.
Mike,
that's what
dropped.
I was going to say. And then you interrupted me.
I'm sorry. Oh, that would have been so epic.
I know.
My gosh. You got to like poke me or something.
Thank you for listening. Okay. As always, please remember to like us on Instagram, share us on Instagram, share us. We found out recently that someone found us on TikTok. Who even knew that we were on TikTok? But we are.
Folks, put us on TikTok.
TikTok. I don't even know how to use TikTok.
I don't know how to Instagram, so we're in trouble.
Thank you for listening.
Share comments too if you have specific thoughts about how these organizations, these churches could be doing it better. We'll share that with whoever will listen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. If you or someone you know is stuck in a trafficking situation and needs help, please reach out to the National Human Trafficking Hotline by calling 1-888-373-7888. Or text HELP, H-E-L-P, to 233-733.